And now, here back on Raglan Community Radio and Free FM, we are going to be joined now by our guest for today, John Carapiet. Hello, John. How you going?
Good, thank you.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I'm fine. How are you?
Excellent. Yep, no, very good, thank you. And firstly, I want to say thank you very much for coming on the show, John. Really appreciate your time. And yeah, I said earlier that, yeah, we've been trying to jack this one up for months, John, but here we are finally.
No worries.
Yeah, sweet. All right, well, I guess I want to start with some basics, I suppose. You know, what is the difference between gene editing and a GMO, John?
Great question. From the most recent research by Plant and Food, from a consumer point of view, not a lot of difference. They don't see a difference between gene editing and GMOs because essentially they are the same thing. They involve similar in-lab changes to genes. The difference that you might hear about is that the old GMOs were mainly transgenic, so they mixed genes between species. The new, what they call new genomic techniques or gene editing, or CRISPR-Cas, you might also hear it called, that doesn't necessarily mean that you end up with a plant or animal with foreign genes from other animals. So that was one of the concerns that people had way back. But unfortunately, gene editing still uses some of the same techniques and new techniques that still can have the problems that emerged with GMOs in the past with gene editing. So that means unexpected changes to the genes that might pop up later on. The need to trace them, because even though one of the arguments for gene editing being different, and as I say, the consumer is not seeing that difference. And you know, I hope that in this conversation I can explain that I'm trying to put the consumer back in the discussion, because the debate about gene editing and genetic engineering in New Zealand hasn't had a lot about GMOs because we haven't had it here. Mm. But the new government wants to change that. It wants to liberalize the rules to have more genetic engineering and encourage the biotechnology industry. And one of the arguments about gene editing is, oh, well, that's okay now. We can use gene editing. It's not GMOs, but it is GMOs. It is genetic engineering. It does carry real issues for farmers, for consumers, for the food industry. And one of the things that I hope out of this conversation comes is that farmers know that there's this discussion going on, that they know the government is planning to really support the biotechnology industry because they see money in it and success in it. But we mustn't forget the consumer in any moves to liberalize genetic engineering. And farmers have got to speak up. Because the farmers at one end, I mean, in a way, farmers are a consumer too of products from the agritech industry. But the consumers are at the other end of the whole chain. And one of the things that needs to be in the government policy, because they're going to go forward with it. They are the government. They've got the power. But they've got to listen to farmers and to the consumer and to our markets overseas to not throw the baby out with the bathwater, to protect organic production that doesn't allow GMOs at all, to protect G-free conventional production, because that's really what the markets overseas are wanting, and to a large extent we've been meeting that demand for GMO-free food. I mean, Fonterra uses the non-GMO project when it markets its products in America. Lewis Road Creamery is also a big exporter to America of dairy, and they really push the non-GMO, you know, of difference for New Zealand. So the debate's on. We haven't had much of a debate for a long time. The technology we hear has moved on, but essentially the consumer issues and the issues to make sure that you've done the gene editing you think you've done, and as I say, to protect the non-gene-edited option, to make sure that conventional food doesn't get contaminated and farmers have a choice and consumers have a choice. That's what the debate about the new gene editing and new genomic techniques and essentially GMOs is still about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, that's exactly what I want to sort of approach this one from the farmers and also the consumers' angles for sure. But I'll just before we get into that stuff, I guess what are the current rules and regulations in Aotearoa, and what are that you've heard of anyway? They've been pretty shush about it. But what are the government's plans around the changes that you've heard of?
Well, at the moment, we've got no commercial GMO crops in New Zealand, and that's definitely an asset for brand New Zealand. You know, people overseas are looking to New Zealand for those sort of products, and we can do that. What the government is saying is that our rules have been too strict, that we've missed out on some of the innovations the Americans and other people have had, and that we've got to catch up, that we've got to keep up. And they're also saying that, number one, the consumer doesn't seem to care, which may not be the case, certainly not internationally. They may not know about it here in New Zealand so much because we haven't had it, and it's not been an issue because, essentially, since the 2000s, there's rules about growing it here that mean you've got to, you can't, there's no ban, by the way, but the rules are so strict that the applicant has to show that it's not going to be a danger to the environment and it's not going to be a health risk. And that, and showing that, the industry argues is too expensive. It's too difficult to show that, or it costs too much to jump through the hoops. So what the new government is saying is, well, we'll get rid of the hoops, that will make it easier for you to do all these things. And there's a number of aspects to it, and some of them I actually agree with. And the last government had already started this process about medicine, because genetic engineering is used in medicine. I mean, the insulin that people use every day is made through a genetic engineering process, the diabetics, etc. So, there's a lot of widespread acceptance of GE and GMOs in medicine because it's very strictly controlled and it's an individual patient being treated. And I think the government looking at making sure that the rules aren't blocking those kind of developments, my feeling is that New Zealanders would agree with that. You don't want to stop good medical research and stuff. But when you listen to people like Judith Collins, they'll talk about that. But that's not what the issue is. I don't think there's a big concern that changing the rules to do good medicine is a risk to farming and exports. What is a risk to farming and exports is the other side of what the government wants to do, which is to, as I say, liberalise the use of GMOs in the field, in farming. And one of the things that, one of the poster childs of that debate, and it's been going for a few years, is GE ryegrass. And I don't think a lot of farmers may have heard of that, this idea that you can reduce methane emissions by changing the grass or changing the cows. And, yes, and those things may be possible. But I mean, let's talk about the GE ryegrass, because that is one of the first things that ACT and National have said they want to get going. Mm. Well, I'm afraid they're going to be disappointed, because the trials of those GE ryegrass have been done in America haven't been very successful, and they're not successful compared with the alternatives that farmers need to be offered as well, which is mixed forage, and even conventional ryegrass has now been bred to reduce methane when it goes through. So the need for the GE ryegrass and the long-time failure of the GE ryegrass really to succeed, and the fact that most consumers don't want it, and I can explain where we know that, how we know that from the data. Mm-hmm. But the best place to find out about the GE ryegrass, because it does get mentioned a lot, is go to the Newsroom website. Newsroom, the news company, did a really good expose last year. I think it was called "The Grass Isn't Greener in Australia" or something like that. Yep. And Newsroom looked at the ryegrass story over the years of trials. I don't think any animals has actually been fed it, by the way, despite the trials in America. So no animal trials and what it does to the milk has been really researched, as far as I can tell. But what we do know is that in Australia, where they have been doing the trials as well, or applying for trials, they actually had to pull the last one because they had a suspected allergen in the product, and therefore they withdrew the application, and they'll try and fix that up, and they'll probably reapply for trials. But the fact that they have a suspected allergen in a product which should be natural and what the consumer wants and have a long history of safe use, that's really where the consumer market is going. And the idea of fixing up our methane issue with this particular ryegrass is really a very short-sighted view of what the market wants and also what the real solutions are, because I think most people now know you can't just fix one thing. You need to look at the system. You need to look at mixed forage would be multiple croppings for feed. You wouldn't be so reliant on imported feed. And of course, one of the feed is actually where, as I said, there's no commercial GM crops in New Zealand. I mean, and the Fonterra are exporting knowing that they can say no GMOs to the American market. Zespri have had a fantastic innovation pipeline. I just had one of their red fruits the other day. All non-GMO, because they have read the market. And what the situation, therefore, is that the government is saying all our rules that have kept our food system safe and allowed us to do GMO-free and organic, those rules have been too restrictive for the biotech and agritech industry. They need to be relaxed. And for me, if they do that, it should be an alarm bell for all New Zealanders, because we might be losing the very point of difference in the market that we've got, which is non-GMO. We're transferring the risks, because there are risks in all new products. And if they do try and get these products into fields, it could be GM soy, for example, which is a really not a good idea for New Zealand. But I've seen an Australian scientist saying it'd like to see GE soy grown in New Zealand, and we can talk about that, why that's not a good idea.
Right.
But the way that the government is really biased towards promoting biotechnology industry is really skewing the playing field. We need to find a middle path for New Zealand and to protect our farmers' ability to produce non-GMO food, whether it's organic or conventional, their ability to know what they're planting. Because once you have gene editing, and if it is deregulated and not tracked and traced, you've lost control of your gene pool. And so in the European market, this debate's been going on much more than here, and they've decided they will trace and label these new genomic technique products, because the consumer needs to know, and the manufacturing and the supply chain needs to know, and the farmer needs to know. So even though they're saying they're not going to test them for safety, which is a real mistake, because independent scientists are saying you've got to look to what you've done with gene editing as well. It can change other things. Even one little change
make
a huge difference.
Well,
so
kind of makes sense to me.
They need to look at that. And I guess where I'm going with this is that, so far, those strict rules we've had that the government thinks are too much, they're too hard, I think they've been great. I think they've done what they needed to do. Allow development, but make sure it's safe to the environment and people. If they drop them, the biggest thing on the table has to be liability. The companies that are wanting to use these products, if they're going to be relaxed, the rules around them, no longer be precautionary, you know, drop the precautionary policy or principle that says don't do anything you don't really know what you're doing. If they're going to do that, then they've got to be held liable. They've got to get insurance to cover the damage to, say, contaminating another person's farm, a farmer losing their certification, losing an export contract for non-GMO because they've been contaminated.
Yep.
And overseas, that's happened. So we need to be really sure, make sure it doesn't happen here.
Yeah, I just want you to elaborate on that, but because our guest last week, Tim Franson, that was his main concern. Yeah. He's an organic farmer, right? And you hear from Judith Collins, who, if you don't know, folks, she's the one running the, the steering committee or whatever, looking at it in the government. And one of her lines has been, oh, you know, there's never been a problem, don't worry about it. But there actually has been a guy in Australia. So do you want to tell us that little story, John?
Yeah, I mean, it's slightly disappointing to hear that kind of generalisation. There's never been a problem with GMOs overseas. We're missing out. So Steve Marsh was a farmer, I think, in South Australia. And he was an organic farmer that actually had to go to court because he got contaminated by another farmer's crop next door. He lost his certification, and he had to go to court to get compensation. And as far as I know, he lost. Mm. And unfortunately, this is one of the things that farmers need to be really aware of, is that if there's a history of the biotechnology industry being really severe, because a lot of what's being done is being driven by patents. So if you had the GE ryegrass, and God forbid that happens in my view, but if it happened,
yep,
and you ended up having it on your field because it contaminated your crop, it's feasible, and I'll give you the example overseas where it's happened. It shouldn't happen here. It's feasible that you could be sued as a farmer for having that crop on your field, even though you didn't want it. And that's what happened to a well-known case, and the man just died a couple of years ago, a chap called Percy Schmeiser, who was a Canadian canola farmer. There's actually a film out called Percy and Goliath, because he was up against Monsanto, who literally took him to the cleaners.
Right.
They found their patented seed in his seed and said, oh, you stole our seed. And he said, no, I didn't. You've contaminated me. And the whole thing went through courts and years of it. But eventually, I think he had to destroy his seed. But it was a really clear case that something's wrong with a system where the patented gene is owned by the company, and then someone who doesn't want it because it's contaminated their crop ends up being, you know, criminalized or prosecuted for having it. And so that liability thing and that, you know, the company that ended up contaminating his crop shouldn't have been claiming patent rights. They should have been sued for contaminating his crop.
Yeah, I would have thought so, but you know, they can afford some pretty high-priced lawyers, those fellas. Yep.
Aye.
So if you hear that, no, don't worry about it, folks. Well, actually, yeah, there have been cases where you know, things haven't gone all swimmingly constantly.
And we've had it here, of course, mate. I mean, we've had crops. We have had field trials here. We haven't had the ryegrass trialed here, but we've had other things.
Yep.
Tamarillos. Little salmon were tried years ago.
Oh, and really?
There's a history of, it's a really sad story, but about 20 odd more years ago, Kim Hill was, like the national radio spokesperson, on the national radio.
She got
sued for calling one of the companies a dodgy GMO salmon company because they'd hidden the fact that they were doing these developments and their salmon had deformities on their heads.
Right.
And so there was a big hoo-ha about that. And I think there is GM salmon being developed in America and sold and stuff. And again, the difference between whatever we produce here is a big one. People don't want GM salmon. There may be some markets, and especially internationally, GM crops and food have tended to be sold cheap because they've been not wanted by food eaters. So they've gone into animal feed, and that's what, just to answer that question of what do we have in New Zealand, we don't have any commercial GM crops. It's all GE free.
Yeah.
And we have some trials and have had some trials over the years, but the kind of the biggest Achilles heel of our food system is animal feed being brought in and ending up with chickens, I guess, because animal feed from GE soy, I don't think Fonterra are allowing their farmers to use, but
okay.
It does end up in other things. So, animal feed is one entry of GM ingredients into New Zealand. And the other is a lot of stuff that's been approved by the food authorities from America and other places, mainly corn and maize and things like that, which have been made resistant to Roundup.
Yeah.
So those, there's lots of, like, scores of them. 50, 100 have been approved, this one and that one, each one being slightly different in its genetic makeup.
Right.
But they've been approved as safe. So they're coming in sometimes into the food chain, but a lot of companies have made, what happened over the last 10 or 15 years is any company worth its weight has made sure, and I'm talking about food manufacturers, have made sure that they've got a supply chain. It can be called identity preserved, so that they know that that crop, people like Sanitarium, they know that that wheat has not gone anywhere near GMOs. They've traced it from the fields all the way through to their supply chain. So it's identity preserved.
Yeah.
And, and that's become the norm for good companies that have got a face to the consumer, because the consumers really clearly said they definitely want it labeled. I mean, everybody, Americans, British, Europeans, everybody wants gene editing. Not the old GMOs, but the new stuff that's coming our way. They want gene edited, labeled and traced, so they have a choice, and so should farmers.
Absolutely.
So that's the issue, that the new stuff may not be traced, the new stuff may not be tested, and the new stuff may not be labeled. And that, again, would become a new weakness for us, because you've got to know, people want to know. So there will be companies all over the world saying, well, you may not want to label it, but we need to know whether it's GMO or not, whether it's gene edited or not. So we've got to secure the supply line and make sure it doesn't get contaminated.
No, I completely agree. Yeah, I mean, and everybody, like you say, from the farmer right through to consumer, wants to know these things, right? And I think more and more consumers are getting more savvy about where their food comes from and that these days, especially. You have an excellent webinar you did for the Soil and Health Association, which I just watched. So, yeah, watch that one, folks. It's going to come up on the Over the Fence podcast, Facebook, and I think on the radio station one as well, I think Mikey was going to do. So, yeah, check that one out for more from John.
If people watch it, and I hope they do, start 11 minutes in, because that's when the main slide start, and you might, there's a bit of an intro.
Yep.
I mean, watch the whole thing if you want to, please do. But to cut it short, it starts 11 minutes in, and it's a real... it talks a little bit about what we've seen in the overseas market, because we don't hear about that in New Zealand. But the markets overseas for non-GMO food. Now, of course, organic by definition doesn't allow GMOs, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about conventional produce that markets itself as being not genetic engineered. And it's a massive market, and it's growing at about 10 to 15% a year internationally, especially in China and in India.
Yes.
And those are the countries that we really need to remember. We're looking, I mean, all consumers want some good food, nice food, cheap food. But the consumers that our market is really appealing to, and any farmer and any exporter who goes overseas with our product is benefiting from this impression of brand New Zealand as being non-GMO, clean and green, ethical to some extent.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
You know. So they're buying into this reputation that we have, and we've got to maintain that reputation and not lose it.
I completely agree, yeah. And, yeah, you had some really interesting graphs and things like that about, you know, the high levels of consumers, you know, worldwide who actually want all the labelling and, you know, actually don't want to eat GE or GMO yeah. sort of food and things like that. And, yeah.
And the research here, I mean, Plant and Food did this really good study, and I did mention it in that webinar, and it was called The Future Urban Consumer, and it was all about technology and agriculture and what consumers actually like and don't like.
Yeah.
And the most rejected technology amongst New Zealand and Australian consumers was gene editing. And the ones they liked were things like robotics and controlled containment and things that were basically not taking away their power and their choice and their choice. And so things like gene editing, which were kind of invisible, and especially if they were hidden because they weren't revealed on packaging, is not what people want.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, ultimately, from the whole food chain, right from the farmer to the consumer, basically all want the same thing, right? So, it's just interesting.
They want the same thing, but I guess the difference is, Craig, that industry sees biotechnology as the solution. And, you know, and I think we've got to find the middle path, because we must use biotechnology ethically and sustainably. And I think, you know, as in the medical uses, that they're contained in research. There's a thing called marker-assisted breeding, which can find... look at the genes in a sheep and a ram and identify, for example, natural resistance to facial eczema. Yep. And then the breeding can be focused on those animals to get the desired outcome. Now, that's not genetic engineering. It uses gene technology in the lab to find out what the genes are and then use them wisely. But that kind of use of gene technology, marker-assisted breeding, understanding things, I think is much more likely to find us comfort and acceptance of consumers globally. But once you start spraying fields with RNA pesticides, with nanotechnology, which is what the future end is already happening in America,
You
start doing that, you're really ratcheting up that whole problem we've already got of using pesticides. These are just new pesticides. And so what boils at the heart of it is that biotechnology industry are very clever and successful. They're driven by patents, and you know, I'm not saying they're not trying to do good things, but they're looking at it through a particular lens, and that lens isn't the consumer lens. The consumer doesn't really want it.
No.
So they're trying to find ways that make people want it or find uses of it that are really compelling, and obviously medicine is one of them. But in terms of farming, once it's out of the bottle and, you know, and out of the lab and in the field, there's been lots of problems. I mean, you've got super weeds in America. You've got contaminated wheat that was trialed in a wheat trial, you know, decades ago, popping up in fields, you know, a decade later. Same with canola.
Right.
So it's very hard to control things once they're out in nature. And so that receiving environment, whether it's the field or the natural environment that new GMOs might go into, that hasn't changed. The gene technology might have updated, and gene editing is much more targeted in what it tries to do.
Yep.
But it isn't necessarily more successful in making only that change. It can make accidental changes.
Mm.
So that's why independent scientists and much of the food industry and certainly consumers are saying, oh, well, it tested, traced, and labeled. And industry is saying, no, it's so much like nature. But the point is, it's not nature, and that's what consumers want. They want the things produced with the grain of nature, a lot of consumers. So they're saying it's so like nature, we're not going to worry about it. Well, I'm afraid that's not the consumer point of view, and it shouldn't actually be the legal point of view, because they're trying to patent this stuff and sell it to you and gain from that. They need to be taking responsibility if things go wrong, and unfortunately, we know things can go wrong. So that's where insurance will check what's the risk to the farmers, what's the risk to our exports, what's the risk to public health, and that needs to be part of anything that the government brings in.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And And the scientific debate, apart from actually around, you know, the type of GE or GMO or whatever, there's also in your webinar, like, there's been a guy did a study on the effect of GMO food on children, on gut health, and also on the effects of, well, the so-called positive effects of GE and GMO on the climate. And, yeah, not all is as it seems, it appears, John.
No, I mean, the issues about human health from GMOs is very, very unclear because so little research has been done to track consumers, for example, in America, and what their health looks like. Mm. I mean, at a kind of gross level, if you look at Americans' health, and they've got a lot of GMOs in their food chain, I wouldn't want to be following them and emulating that direction for public health. Now, I'm not saying it's all linked to GMOs at all, but the fact is that people in America are aware of the GMOs and the pesticides that have gone with them, and the biggest market growth in America is the non-GMO project. If you look that up, and that's the one that Fonterra use, and that's the one that Lewis Road Creamery use, and you sometimes see it on products in New Zealand as well. It's the non-GMO project, and it emerged in America. We didn't need it here. Because we basically had strict rules, and they have to label the products, and people therefore could choose not to buy it, and the markets here said, well, people don't really want it, so we won't use it. But in America, they didn't have good labeling. They widely used it. People didn't really want it, but they knew it was coming into the food chain. So this huge industry is set up to just basically say, this food is not GMO. This food is not GMO. And you'll see it all over American products. And that's because our markets in India, in China, and America, amongst these discerning consumers, and there's a lot of them, want non-GMO.
And that's, that seems to be, you know, and that's just not you know, people who would usually just buy your organic products or whatever, that's like majority, large chunk of every sort of consumer, isn't it, John?
Look, you're always going to find a market, and you know, and everyone's suffering the cost of living today, so there is a market for cheap food, I mean, really cheap food. And unfortunately, that's been the experience of, you know, farmers around the world for GMOs. It's ended up being, as I say, an animal feed. There's a premium paid to canola crops and farmers in Australia for non-GMO canola. You know, there's premiums for non-GMO. It's an interesting one because when the Prime Minister was interviewed before the election, he said that he thought the premium for non-GMO wasn't worth worrying about because it's about 5%. Now, I did some blogs last year, and I looked at some of the data, some of it a bit out of date, but the figures that were in these reports were 20, 30, 40% premium for non-GMO. It depends what it is. It depends how at risk the other version, the GMO version, is, and how widely it's spread. So soy, GE soy is one of the things you'll hear about because, as I say, it comes in animal feed here.
Yep.
It's been big in America. But one of the funniest stories, and again, you know, if people watch that webinar, they'll see it because it's about, you know, this American burger that was that came into the New Zealand market with a bit of a fanfare over the few years.
Oh, was it Impossible Burger?
Actually stopped using GMO soy for these markets. They still use the GM heme, that's a lab-grown thing, but you know, to make it bloody. But the main ingredient was also GMO soy that is often heavily sprayed with Roundup. It's, you know, in some parts of the world, it's deforestation, it's nasty, it's not good.
Yeah.
And a lot of consumers avoid GM soy. And all the brands of soy milk, if you go to the supermarket, are all non-GMO because the market... See, this is the point. A farmer doing his work isn't hearing this. The consumer in the supermarket is thinking about it occasionally when outside of New Zealand when it's become an issue, whereas we haven't had it in New Zealand. The marketing companies, you know, the Fed Farmers, the Beef and Lamb, Fonterra, they know the data. They see what consumers want. But they've also got this foot in the other field, which is to try and drive innovation, to build intellectual property, to sell products.
Yep.
So there's a tension. When they look at the market, there's a tension between all our food, kind of like, you know, farmer organizations, and the farmers need to be aware that they must be a little bit more suspicious of the promises and the promotion of these solutions because they're not the only solutions, and whether we go with them or not, there's some criteria we've got to set for the rules in New Zealand, and one of them has to be protecting non-GMO farmers and production exports and organic, and the other is to making sure we don't muck up nature with some of these products. So those, I would say, are absolute pillars. And if the government, so what the government has said is they're going to continue labelling the old GMOs, but they haven't said they're going to label and trace the new ones. And that's a big issue. They've also said that they want to be so liberalised and more like America, more like these countries that have got genetic engineering and gene editing. They want to follow them by automatically allowing any GMO product that's been approved in two OECD countries, like that could be Argentina and Brazil or something, I don't know, but any two countries that approve a GMO product, we're going to be so open to it that they can automatically sell it here. So it would be growing in New Zealand. Now, we've got a lot of businesses
that's a very low bar.
Corn. Lots of seed is produced here because it's clean and not GMO and not contaminated. So once we let that thing spreading in the open environment, that seed export business, the guarantee of non-GMO, all of these things get lost. And that's a huge asset to our country. And, you know, to be able to say we've got clean seed, that we can, you know, we can produce onions that are not GMO, that we can produce potatoes, etc., is actually an asset.
Oh, for sure. I completely agree. And I just don't know why. Well, I kind of do, you know, the profit and everything else for these biotech companies and stuff like that. But I mean, what other reasons would Aotearoa even be considering? You know,
well, because doing biotechnology this? Industry is a big industry, and it's a part of a global industry. I mean, Monsanto, you know, has been around for years, many, you know, in different guises.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, and I'm not saying that just them. I mean, somebody, you know. We've got homegrown research being done as well. And I think I'm not against biotechnology, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't develop biotechnology industry, but it needs to be with the grain of nature and in line with our brand image and what consumers want and what the public wants, and protect the public interest and the farmer interest.
And the farmer
interest, there's this tension between what business want and that, you know, there's other interests, whether it's the public or consumer or our export values. So that tension needs to be, we need to find a middle path. And I think part of that needs to be, whatever you do, government, you trace and label and test any of these new products, because that's actually the bottom line. You also protect non-GMO farm production and non-GMO landscapes, natural environments can't end up with GMO bacteria floating around them. You know, we don't want this for the future. And the third thing is to actually invest in that non-GMO brand. The market wants it. That's what we've got now. Yes, improve our agriculture, reduce methane by mixed forage, you know, go organic. Look, there's lots of different solutions, system solutions that are not reliant on genetic engineering. And as I say, use gene technology in containment. Do the marker-assisted breeding, but don't take it into the field, and certainly don't take it into the field without telling people, keeping track of it, holding those users responsible.
And I guess, you know, like you could sort of saying, hey, look, once the genie's out of the bottle and then loose in the wild, there's not much you can do about it, like, especially, you know, like microbes and things that are genetically kind of engineered. I mean, there's no way possible to control that sort of thing, is there, John? Yeah.
I mean, and that's why I quite liked what Lincoln University scientists have been doing, which is looking at a natural fungi that they found in soil that will help reduce farm contamination, I think it is, with nitrogen. But it's a naturally occurring one, so they haven't actually changed. Because, as I say, it's really hard for us to imagine, because the scientists are so confident. They say, we've done this in the lab, and we've made this product, and it does this. But as I say, they're so much more advanced than they were 10 years ago when CRISPR was essentially developed. So it's only been around, this technology, as it's being proposed now, has only been around 10 or 11 years, CRISPR-Cas.
Yeah,
so
which
it's
is,
very
is,
new.
It's not, very
not
long,
a long history
no,
of safety.
No.
Not millions of years of development. And I guess the point is, from a scientific point of view, the complexity of the natural environment, that of course we already intrude in with our natural, you know, our current farming, but and we know that we've made some mistakes with chemicals and stuff that have lingered on in nature, etc. So we've got
DDT in that,
from what we've done before. But the future says that the receiving environment is still as complex as it was 5 years and 10 years ago, and the issues of contamination and spreading into nature and genetic constructs emerging places where you don't want them to, because they've swapped between bacteria and viruses or plants. That is a very hard thing to prevent. In fact, it's impossible. So either you don't do it, or, which is my view, that you don't try and go down that pathway, except for some, you know, some amazing reason which they haven't seen, or you hold you put strict liability in, because companies are being rushing these products to try and get IP and profit. But if they're liable for the damage, they'd be a bit more cautious.
Completely agree with that. I just don't see New Zealand.
What people don't know, and it's one of the reasons why we don't have GMOs here in commercial use, is because in New Zealand there is no liability. It's what's called socialised risk, and right. It's basically on the public. So councils in New Zealand, especially Auckland and Northland and other places, and I think Hawke's Bay as well, because they're food exporters and because their farmers and communities have said, well, hang on, the government rules don't have a ban. The government allows them to do this and has done for 10 or 20 years, but the local councils have also got rules in place in their plans that say the company needs to put a bond up before it does a trial. Yep. The company needs to notify and indemnify other farmers nearby. And those are in plans now. Again, they were under the RMA. So, and the RMA, I know it's got a lot of problems and it's changing, but both of the rules about genetic engineering and the RMA are changing. And what that might do is expose farmers and councils to risks that are really the responsibility of the biotechnology industry pushing it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Now you mentioned those regions. I think it was a few years back, wasn't it? I think it was Auckland and Northland and maybe Hawke's Bay who declared themselves GE-free regions.
Actually many more than that. But they were kind of symbolic because it was part of the public and civil society pushback on what was planned 20 years ago, which was open slaughter, a bit like what's being planned or proposed now. Mm. The government is sounding a bit more cautious. They're saying they're going to try and manage the risks and get the benefits, but get GMOs into our fields and into our farming. And it's that last bit that's the problem. No one wants to give up the benefits. No one wants to stop science and research. But once you get it into our fields and farming and don't prevent it from spreading and don't allow people choice, we've lost. We've lost the game, mate. And, we keep on being told that we're missing out. Well, one of the studies that I put in that webinar was that in America, there's only about 6 gene-edited products there. Mm. They've had about 100 approved, but they don't necessarily succeed in the market. And there was a one called the non-browning mushrooms. And apparently that hasn't gone anywhere because they invented it, they started to market it, and no one wants it. So, the fact that there's not that many products of gene editing success that we are missing out on, the fact that the ryegrass argument doesn't stand up because there's other ways to do what the ryegrass can do, but better than that ryegrass. Mm. All of these things that we're promised, those promises have been made over time. And as I say, we're finding the middle path to not believe all the hype, to just tie-ho and value what we've got, because the consumer internationally and the future consumer in America, in China, in India, those consumers are saying they want what we got.
Yeah.
So let's not make sure that we lose what we've got by believing the hype to fix something up that it doesn't necessarily fix up, and to create, to lose out on one of the big points of difference for New Zealand.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right?
Find other ways to fix it. Better ways to fix it, more smart ways. It boils down to working with the grain of nature, and that's what we're talking about, which is what that research by the Lincoln people does.
Yep.
It finds naturally occurring things, and we can use it smartly. But the other people, and in that webinar I mentioned what's happening globally, is the big agri-tech companies are developing bacteria, genetically fungi, genetically engineered fungi, to market products. And it really worries me that once those are out of the box, you're going to have them whether you want them or not.
It's been great chatting, John. If you just joined, we're talking to John Carapiet for talking all about GE and GMO and that and Aotearoa and worldwide. And you've been involved with this for like 20 years or so, haven't you, John?
I got involved way back as a market researcher and as a consumer because I heard what was happening. I spoke to one of the big scientists in the UK more than 20 years ago. He was one of the senior genetic engineers that actually came out publicly and said, the technology may be an issue. We've got to be regulating it and not pushing it to market. And he had lost his job, by the way. He got fired and was maligned for many years. Right. He only died a few years ago. His name was Arpad Pushtai. And, he's well known in the global debate about genetic engineering because he was the scientist who spoke out. And there's others since then, people like, I mentioned a few, Seralini did research on animals to show that, you know, we've got to be much more, we mustn't buy into the idea that you can assume it's safe because we've ended up being really clever. Luckily, there are new ways to test kind of how safe these products are. And, you know, you don't hear this, like we don't hear a lot about the consumer in this debate in New Zealand.
Yeah.
You don't hear a lot about the science has moved on to test these products and to regulate them and to trace them. And one of the things that can be done is you can identify them and follow them through the field as long as you know what the genetic change is.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the, you know, that goes to that, those core issues that farmers need to speak up. And as I say, you might have to speak up loudly to your organizations that, you know, that govern the industry, because they've got a foot in both camps. They, you know, Fonterra is farmer owned.
Yep.
Except they're busy investing in, you know, lab grown meat and other things because they want to cover their options. Don't let them forget that we're already benefiting from this image of New Zealand as being clean and green and actually being GMO-free in our production.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely right, John, about all that stuff. And, we've covered a lot of ground in this in this chat, John, but it's been great having a chat to you. Thanks very much for coming on the show, and I'd love to get you back on again in the future to have, discuss a bit more if you're up for that, John.
It'll be great, because at the moment we don't know what the government policy looks like.
You
know,
yes.
They've said, we've had their pre-election, you know, examples. As I said, the biggest worry is aligning with America and Argentina and allowing any product that they've approved in. I think that's a complete disaster. But hopefully, as I said, the biggest issue for me reading that policy was that, and the idea of not tracing and labelling the new GMOs. They're saying they'll keep the old ones, but the old ones are over. The old ones won't be used much. They're going to use the new ones, and they're going to bring them in slowly but surely, and they need to be traced and they need to be monitored.
Quite right. And I guess just to finish off, John, you know, if you're just a person, average person on the street, how would you suggest you sort of, you know, if this has pricked your interest or whatever, what's the best way to kind of, find some stuff out or and things like that, John?
Well, I think there's two things that ordinary people can do. One is at the shop, you know, support the brands that say no GMO. Ask a company if you're in doubt as to what their policy is. All the big ones are pretty much non-GMO or try and avoid it. There's no guarantees because of that contamination that's already happening, and, you know, in soy particularly. But the other thing is to speak up and push back on the myths. I mean, like, one of the myths is that, and I think Judith Collins uses this, you know, don't worry about it. You know, GMO is everywhere. No one cares. Well, they do care internationally, and it's not everywhere. It's been forced into animal feed mainly other things. But your soy latte, if you're making it yourself at home, with soy milk from any of the manufacturers in New Zealand and from overseas shipping to New Zealand, it's non-GMO, it's GE-free, because the market listens to the consumer. Unfortunately, Judith, she's not the consumer minister, she's the biotech minister and science minister.
Yeah.
She needs to hear and understand that what they do in biotech impacts agriculture, it impacts exports, it impacts a whole lot of things that are not just about science. And we've got to, you know, manage how science, you know, benefits society. And again, I've hoped I've explained that, you know, we need to find a middle path where, yes, we can use marker-assisted breeding and clever gene science, but once it's out of control and out of the lab and in the fields, then a whole set of liability and containment rules and traceability rules need to come in place before that.
Yeah, quite right. It's been great chatting. You're a font of knowledge on this topic, John. I really appreciate your time here on the Wrangley Community Radio and Free FM. And thanks again for coming on. I'd love to get you back on. I don't know, in a couple of months or something, or when something pops up anyway, that'd be great, John. But thanks for your time today.
And
really enjoyed it. And thanks again.
Thank you. All the best, mate. Cheers.
Good on you. Cheers, John. Bye.